Hello, friends, and welcome to this week's episode of the Prep Athletics Podcast. I'm proud to have joining us Coach Bryce Daly from Salisbury School. Now, Bryce grew up in New England and chose to go to Salisbury School and was a reclass junior and senior there. And from there, he as a guard went and got a full ride to UMass Lowell. So he was there as a D1 guard, and he talks about the pros and cons of that experience, how he chose Salisbury and what the decision was to even leave his current high school and go to prep school. And then we talked to him about all the other items we talked to other coaches about, to include how does he develop his players? What do postgrads need to do academically during their postgrad year? Do you have to play other sports? What are the advantages of being an all-boys school, which Salisbury is, and much, much more. So we get into it with Bryce. He had a great podcast interview. And I don't know when this is going to be released, but we recorded this on April 30th, and we do get into the new NCAA rulings about a potential postgrad year counting towards your college eligibility. So we share our thoughts on that. And it was really a good podcast. If you like this podcast, be sure to share it with a friend, right? We want to share this knowledge out there for free and let people know as much as possible about this world so they can make the best decision possible. And if you want us to help you potentially find the right fitting prep school, go to our website at prepathletics.com, fill out the free assessment, and we get back to everybody on if this makes sense for you or not. So thank you for joining us today. Excited that you're here. Glad you could join us and enjoy this podcast with Coach Bryce Daly from the Salisbury School. Welcome to the Prep Athletics Podcast. This is Corey Heights.
Some battles. I'm not sure if they got us. If they did, maybe.
So you will get better as a player during that year.
So it was kind of exciting. Like, oh yeah, somebody wants me.
Bryce, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And I know we've met in the past. We've worked together on a player. So excited to have you on today. But before we get started, fill me in on where you come from and what got you into basketball.
Yeah. So, you know, grew up about an hour north of Salisbury School in Salisbury, Connecticut, where I'm currently, you know, coaching and working. You know, played kind of bunch of sports growing up. You know, my dad was a baseball guy, so it was kind of baseball and basketball that you know were the prioritized two. And then, you know, fell in love with basketball at a young age. You know, did the whole AAU travel ball stuff, which introduced me to the world of prep school, and was lucky enough to attend Salisbury School for a couple years as a student athlete before transitioning to UMass Lowell, where I played my college career.
All right. Now, when did you start at Salisbury School? What age?
I was a repeat junior. So I did my junior and senior year.
Okay. So what was that conversation like and what led to your family looking to that decision of moving you out of your current high school to then looking at prep schools?
Yeah. You know, it wasn't a one-off conversation. You know, I tried to pick the brains of a lot of different coaches who were familiar with the prep route. You know, trainers, AAU coaches, in different programs. And, you know, through a lot of different research, you know, I quickly realized that, you know, prep school basketball was, you know, a phenomenal platform, you know, a lot of talent, and it, you know, quite literally prepares you for the next level, which is what I wanted to get to. But kind of beyond the basketball piece, right? Like the off the court, you know, it would push me academically. It would kind of prepare me to, you know, life outside of basketball, take on the world, you know, be a well-rounded young man. So, it kind of, you know, filled my cup in more than one area, other than basketball. So it was real intriguing. And then, you know, what kind of solidified it was when I started taking those visits and actually kind of interacting with the communities and, you know, it was pretty eye-opening. I mean, not just, you know, how mature and, you know, the facilities, the access, everything like that, but the pure enjoyment I saw across, you know, all the faculty, right, the teachers, the coaches, and the students there on campus. I mean, it just seemed like a place that I really wanted to be and that would help me grow.
So you obviously were looking at other prep schools too, right?
Correct.
But did you know it though when you went to Salisbury on your visit? Did it kind of become clear that it was the favorite, or were there other factors? Like could you have made this decision without visiting, or do you think visiting was a very important part of this?
I think visiting is very important. And, you know, I even tell a lot of guys that I'm recruiting, connecting with, if it's on Zoom, phone calls, like if the, you know, opportunity presents itself where they can come to campus, I think it's a game changer. Because you can only learn so much, you know, sometimes through photos, videos, and the online calls. And those are great too. I think, you know, those are absolutely necessary, but, you know, actually getting on campus in person, and interacting with everybody and seeing how, you know, the people who are working, living, you know, and, you know, studying there, how their experiences are, their body language, you know, how they're interacting with each other. I think that makes a big difference. So, you know, when I was going through the process, I, you know, probably visited, you know, 7-8 schools, and kind of narrowed it down from there, right? Trying to, you know, interact with the kids, ask them different questions. And again, you know, not rushing into anything, letting it kind of marinate, circling back with people in my circle, and balancing, weighing out everything, like not just the basketball piece, but, you know, how I would do kind of all around at each individual school.
I love that. Now, you know, some families you and I deal with might not have the funds to travel to a school, might be in a foreign time zone or different continent, and they just can't get away for one reason or another. What are your thoughts on that if a family can't visit schools before they make a decision?
Yeah. So, you know, that's a great point. And, you know, I've had a few, you know, situations like that pretty recently. And what I like to do is I like to, again, it's not quite as good as, you know, interacting and being on campus, but I try to get them a lot of videos, right, of, you know, the facilities, the athletic center, the different academic buildings, dorm rooms, you know, and kind of open it up, tell them kind of everything Salisbury offers. And then, again, let them, you know, maybe emphasize specific areas, you know, the college office, anything they really want to see, really providing that via video, and even potentially connecting them with, you know, a current student athlete, you know, a current, you know, parent of somebody who attends Salisbury, just so they can be as well informed as possible. Cause it makes their, you know, confidence and level of comfort, you know, that much greater if they can just be as informed as possible. So there's certainly ways around it for those who can't get here and visit.
Yeah. My two cents is this, like, you know, all these prep schools that we're, you know, showing families, and I'm sure that you visited too, they're beautiful places, right? And now since COVID, you've got virtual tours, you've got websites that have really been upgraded. You've got basketball games on YouTube. You can get a pretty good sense. And I'm not going to lie on this, 100% of my kids, Bryce, that have shown up to prep school on day one, and that was the first time they showed up, it was better than they thought it would be. It's better in person than it was in pictures. And I'm not lying. I've not gotten one like, yeah, it wasn't as good as I thought. Every single person has been like, this is cooler than we thought. It's prettier. We didn't realize this. And for postgrads too, I tell them it's a 9-month business trip, right? If you don't visit as for a postgrad, it's not a big a deal. If you're going for more than 1 year, obviously it's possible. It'd be really ideal if you can visit and see more aspects than maybe just the basketball, since you're going to be there for a longer period of time. So, all right, you got to Salisbury, and from there you ended up playing D1 at UMass Lowell. Walk me through that decision. Like, who else were you talking to, and why did you end up choosing that school?
Yeah, you know, great question. So, you know, I was talking to a few America East schools. You know, I was talking to a couple Patriot Ivies, you know, because I was, you know, sort of attacking the academic side of things, just as enthusiastically as the athletic side of things. And I really try to preach that to our guys, because the better you can do in the classroom, right? Like, now you're in the driver's seat, it opens more doors, right? Doors aren't closed, you know, due to other things besides basketball as you kind of navigate that process. So I committed, you know, pretty early on in my junior year. And there's a bit of a side, you know, story to that. Two of the assistant coaches who were recruiting me pretty heavily at the time, they were both guards at Boston College back in the day. And they were a couple of my favorite players growing up. And I used to go to a lot of the Boston College basketball games, because that's where my dad actually played baseball. So he would take me to kind of all the different sport games there. So it was kind of a full circle moment when, you know, a few guys that I idolized as a young kid, you know, going to games, you know, cheering them on and whatnot, when they started reaching out and recruiting me, it was a pretty special moment. And similar to the whole, you know, visiting prep schools, I took a visit, you know, got on campus at Lowell, met the guys, practiced, you know, saw a game, everything like that. And it felt like home, like the connections, you know, the bond, it was, you know, deeper than just like the basketball sort of, you know, business transactional piece. I could tell that they really cared, you know, checking in on things that weren't even necessarily related to basketball, which meant a lot to me. And again, like that sort of care, you know, and love that they showed me, which ended up paying off because I dealt with some injuries and their kind of support never wavered. You know, I really try to take that and kind of implement it, you know, here at Salisbury with our guys, you know, because it is bigger than basketball. And again, that's someone who you know, lives in and dies by the game of basketball at times. Like it is bigger than basketball, what we're doing here. So, you know, I try to kind of implement the relationship, the care and the support that I got there through those assistant coaches and the head coach. And really display it with our guys.
What surprised you at most when you got to the D1 level?
I mean, from the on-court piece, it definitely the speed and physicality. You know, and again, I'll probably say it a lot over this, you know, podcast, but I try to, everything I learned or was able to soak up at that level, I really try to, you know, bring it over here to our guys. And that's something that I wasn't as, I'd say, informed with, you know, when I was, you know, a student athlete younger, you know, I was on the court 2-3 times a day, but I didn't necessarily prioritize, you know, eating or getting in the weight room as much as I probably needed to. So that speed and physicality is a huge jump. And I tell our guys now, like, it's an even bigger jump because of how portal heavy college is going, right? So you're playing against grown men. You got to do everything you can, you know, from the weight room, the eating, you know, taking care of your body, to be ready to play at that next level.
What was the best part about playing D1 and what was the worst part?
The best part was probably, you know, some of the gyms, the atmospheres, the arenas. I mean, you have the bands there that are playing, which is awesome. And you know, traveling with your teammates, you know, the flights, you make memories that, you know, will last a lifetime. You know, picking a, I'd say the worst part, if I had to pick, you know, a negative, it was, and I love the fact that it felt like a full-time job. But you do miss out on things that time at the college level, as far as, you know, courses you're interested in taking that just, you know, they don't line up with your travel, you know, cause the schedule kind of stretches from like November to March, right? It's pretty much the whole year. So there's some courses I just wasn't able to take, you know, pursue, you know, you don't necessarily, you know, probably make as many off the court friendships as, you know, the typical collegiate athlete, cause you kind of live with your teammates, you're with them, you know, so many hours of the day. So that's probably the one downside. But you know, personally, I wouldn't have changed it. And I, kind of circling back to the prep school, you know, route I took, some of my best friends here either played different sports or were non-athletes, kids from all over the world. So I was pretty informed of how special some friendships can be outside of basketball, and kind of made it a point, you know, in the dining hall and some of my classes to seek out some of those individuals who I probably otherwise wouldn't have connected with.
All right. And after you graduated from UMass Lowell, you went back to your alma mater and became coach. So give us your pitch on Salisbury as a school and also in your basketball program.
Yeah. So, you know, as a school, I think it's a wonderful place and there's probably some bias there, but just like any prep school, right, we have, you know, phenomenal facilities in, you know, courses that can challenge you and a lot of courses that are, you know, real interesting, can set you up for success and maybe even steer you towards a major or what you want to study at the next level. But the community is by far, you know, hands down what make this place so special. I mean, from our weekly meetings, talking about every kid, how they're doing, you know, not just athletically and in the classroom, but in the dorm, socially, how they're getting along. Are they, you know, making friends? Are they interacting, stepping outside their comfort zone in a challenging yet, you know, positive way? It just truly, you know, I felt it as a student and now I see it on the other side as a coach and a teacher, that the faculty truly go above and beyond here and they don't just care through word, they care through action and they show up, you know, day in and day out, you know, not to completely hold your hand, but to let you know that, you know, the highs, the lows and everything in between, like you're not going to go at it alone. You're going to have a full support staff here that are going to provide the blueprint and attack it head on with you So that way, when you do get to that next level, I mean, you soar with flying colors, you know, and there's not really that learning curve. And from the basketball side of things, you know, basketball was and will be, you know, my love. I you know, eat, sleep, and breathe basketball. And I truly want, you know, to help our players become the absolute best basketball player they can become, whether it's 1 year here, 4 years, or somewhere in between. And that's through, you know, really holding them accountable and trying to be very transparent about what it takes, you know, to get to whatever your highest level is and you know, become the best player and best version of yourself. So I try to get in, you know, on court with the guys as much as possible, obviously within the NEPSAC rules. And I'm watching film, you know, it's not just an in-season thing, you know, giving them drills, watching film, you know, even having guys over and watching college NBA games at my apartment, you know, so they can watch and understand, you know, how the game is played, areas they need to kind of add on to their game in order to get to that level. And you know, the players here know that they have somebody, a coach in their corner who will go to war with them and who will, you know, wake up 5, 6 a.m., help them get in the gym, and I'll also be there, you know, late at night to help them get back in the gym and get better. And obviously, you know, on top of basketball, like I mentioned earlier, I hold them accountable from you know, the grades, because I understand how, you know, important that can be as far as opportunities, next level, and also big picture stuff. And I also realize, right, like that I'm their coach, I'm pushing them, but they're away from their family, right? So I try to also be not just their coach, but someone who, again, not just says they care, but demonstrates it, you know, day in and day out.
I love it. And then you guys are an all-boys school. I coached at an all-boys school. I thought it was amazing, the 2 years I was there. But you tell me, when families balk a little bit or ask about the advantages or disadvantages of being an all-boys school, what do you say to them?
Yeah, you know, it comes up time and time again. I think it can be, you know, a huge positive. And again, I've been on both sides of it, and kind of my opinion hasn't changed. I just see that, you know, the young men here are so much, you know, more likely to be themselves, to be open. They don't have to pretend to be something they're not, or to put on sort of this, you know, cool front. They see that it's, you know, a safe place, right? That failing is okay as long as you learn from those lessons and you try again and you work your hardest. And that if you want to step outside your comfort zone, you won't be judged, because you're surrounded by, you know, young men who are thinking, who are feeling the same way. And obviously, you know, a lot of families, you know, kind of emphasize the point, and I agree, like there's, in a way, fewer distractions, right? Like we interact with girls' schools. We have girls' schools in the area who will do mixers. They'll come to sporting events, you know, bonfires by the lake. So you still get the social piece on the weekend, but you're able to really lock in, handle business kind of during that week, you know, be your authentic self, and, you know, have fun while doing it. So I think the all boys piece, you know, it allows guys to truly be, you know, their authentic self. And take, you know, positive risks, right? Athletically, academically, with, you know, less fear of judgment.
Yeah, I love it. I wish I would have gone to an all boys school, because I just, you know, I was going through puberty and just like staring at the back of girls' heads in class, and just being more guarded than I might have been with just guys around. So yeah, I get it. One question a lot of families ask, Bryce, is what each school does in terms of developing their players. So tell me what you guys do at your school as far as that's concerned.
Yeah. So, you know, what I like to do, and it's a little bit easier with the returners, right? Because, you know, we have all their film, misses, makes, turnovers, you know, we break it down and we watch it, you know, all throughout the season and the off season. But even with our new guys, who are, you know, incoming players, I try to get as much film as possible, and really even emphasize like full games, not just the highlights, because highlights are great. I love watching them. But again, you can learn a lot more from the full game. And I'll tell families, recruits that, you know, hey, you're already signed here. Like, we're already taking you. I'm not evaluating you as far as like a recruiter anymore. now I'm going to bat as your coach, right? And the more I know your game in and out, your strengths, your weaknesses, I can really start to put together, you know, skill development plans that are crucial in order to get on the floor at the next level. And again, for me, I take a lot of pride in the, you know, individuality of like the actual, you know, skill development plans, because, you know, just because we have five or six guards, they don't necessarily need the same development, right? Some people are, it's completely foreign, you know, playing out of a pick and roll, reading the big, how they attack it. Some are, you know, proficient at that, but they have a real bad habit of not playing off 2 feet in the paint. So like, I try to really, you know, kind of tailor the skill development, you know, the workouts to kind of fit each individual player needs. And I'll do stuff with them on court. And I also, again, because of some rules and limitations, I give them plenty of drills, skills that they can do individually, but also, you know, with their teammates, because, you know, kind of iron sharpens iron, and they're able to push each other, you know, kind of hold each other accountable and have a little bit more fun doing it, you know, with one another. And then on top of that, right, like I don't just like checking the box and, you know, getting in the gym a couple times a day with them and, you know, optimistically hoping that those drills, you know, are translating or sticking. I like to get down to, you know, 2, 3, 4, you know, either 3-on-3, 4-on-4, 5-on-5, you know, games a week. We have a couple open gyms in the fall. You know, I'm always at those, whether colleges are there or not, because again, I'm still kind of evaluating. I want to make sure that what we're doing, again, is translating to the live play. It's not just checking a box. We're not just getting real good at a drill. They're becoming better basketball players for that next level. And in order to do that, right, the skill sets, you know, the development, it truly does need to translate to, you know, the live play.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for sharing your philosophy on that. And with the training, like if you go to Salisbury, do you have to play another sport during the other seasons?
Yeah, so we're trimester based, and you have to play a sport every trimester. And, you know, we have some guys who are 2-3 sport athletes and they love it and we encourage it. And we have other guys who, you know, basketball is sort of it. You know, they play some other sports, but, you know, they kind of eat, sleep, and breathe basketball as well. So, you know, we have kind of your standard fall and spring sport options for those who maybe want to pursue, you know, soccer, football, baseball, lacrosse, soccer, like at, you know, at the JV, varsity, or even thirds level. But we also have, you know, sort of like rec sports. You know, we have a strength and conditioning offer for like the juniors and seniors, which meets their sport requirement. So they're, you know, strength training as sort of their sport. And, you know, to kind of piggyback off that, we have, you know, starting next fall, 2 brand new weight rooms that will be implemented, which are going to be state of the art, you know, because a lot of talks between head coaches, AD, we realize that, you know, not just basketball, but we have a lot of athletes who want to play at the highest level. And like we talked about earlier, you know, the talent rises, but the speed and physicality, I mean, you're playing older guys, the international, right, sort of population at the college level is picking up a bit. So with those 2 new, you know, weight rooms coming this fall, you know, the idea is like the strength program will, you know, improve a bit. You know, we'll have better spaces. We can physically get these guys ready. The reason it's only kind of offered to juniors and seniors at our school is, you know, we have different strength coaches, and one of my other hats is a strength and conditioning coach, went through certifications. We typically, for the freshmen and sophomores, like to kind of meet and teach them more sort of like the foundational movements and lifts. Because again, like we don't want guys obviously hurting themselves. We want to teach, you know, the proper way to attack the weight room, so they're not just learning stuff, you know, online or, you know, teaching each other while being misinformed. So, a lot of different sport options. Strength and conditioning is an awesome one that a lot of our guys do use either in the fall or in the spring, again, to get them ready for that next level.
Got it. Love it. Love it. Thanks for sharing that. Now, postgrads. When I come there, if I come there as a postgrad, I've got my high school diploma. So what does the academic situation and options look like for them?
Yeah. So, you know, we have a lot of hands-on who, you know, obviously I'm involved with a basketball postgrad because we're talking about, you know, the next level, where they want to get to, you know, what recruiting might already look like. And again, I got to know sort of if they're, you know, striving for, you know, an Ivy, a Patriot League, a NESCAC, a high academic, right? Like the transcripts, the academic rigor has to kind of, align a little bit. But I don't go at it alone, and nor does the kid and family. With these post grads, we connect very quickly with the college office. They immediately get a college advisor that also collabs with the dean of academics to make sure that, again, post grads have the most flexibility. They can take a lot of electives, right? If they want maybe a little bit of a lighter workload, if they've met a lot of sort of the NCAA requirements already. We have some guys who really need that post-grad year to boost the rigor, to prove themselves academically, to get to a high academic school, and kind of everything in between. So the post-grads, without a doubt, have the most flexibility as far as scheduling. We have a lot of really cool electives that our post-grads, really utilize. I mean, we just got a multi-million-dollar media lab where guys can, take sports media or dive into different things that kind of combine the academic and athletic piece. But, we have a lot of different electives that, again, we kind of encourage post-grads to dive into a few of them because they essentially, steer guys, one way or another regarding, college majors, what they may want to study, at least exposing them to some different avenues. So post-grads are usually pretty lucky from the flexibility standpoint.
And let me ask you this. Do you recommend your players take the ACT or SAT anymore?
I do, at least, one time. And again, it's kind of, person to person situation, to situation, where they want to play and what the recruiting's looking like. We have a young man who right now, really wants to play at the Ivy League. So it's, without a question, he's been working hard. He's going to take the SAT again. We have others who, they've taken it once. They're not really necessarily a high academic individual, so they gave it their best crack. We have, SAT and ACT tutoring here, a learning center that works with them. The college office does a great job, kind of preparing them and guiding them through that as well. But I truly, do encourage, at least give it a good shot, provided they have, the necessary support, which is the tutors, the college office, the learning center to really prepare them the right way. And a lot of times, in the past 2 years I've been here, we've had a lot of guys pleasantly surprised after sort of going through the right, sort of hoops and preparing the right way and actually knocking it out of the park.
I love it. Let me ask you this question. So you're obviously working with your final year players, trying to find them a college, right? How does that coincide with your college placement office that's on Southbury's campus, right? Because they're working for athletes and non-athletes, but are you trying to find them a spot first and then college counseling helps them with the transcripts, the applications, everything? Walk me through how that relationship works.
Yeah.
What comes first, you or them or however?
So, usually I'm helping out first, only because I usually get to know the kid, the situation, and what he wants to get out of it, a little bit earlier, because of the whole recruiting and, constant communication throughout the summer, even before they step foot on campus in the fall, even with our summer prep events, right? Like we have, the two NEPSAC events in June. And again, I like to get stuff out to colleges just so they know when we're playing, who to keep an eye on, guys that might pique their interest. So usually, I'm a little bit more hands-on, early in the process. And it allows me then kind of as soon as the school year starts up to have, those conversations with the college advisor, the college office. And I'm already pretty well informed about, what the situation is, what he's looking to get out of it. And then again, from there, they start working really closely with the kid as well, as far as apps, applications, the SAT, the ACT, things of that nature. And it's fluid, right? So like I'm kind of checking in week to week, giving them updates on, offers, visits, how different things went, new schools that may have reached out or, kind of emerged, and it, like I said, it's fluid. So they kind of check in with me week to week to make sure that, everything that is kind of discussed in their individual meetings with the student athlete kind of aligns with our week to week meetings.
Okay. But do they logistically help the kids with like applications, or are you helping them, or?
They usually help. That? They're pretty hands-on with the apps, the college essays, you know, making sure that everything's squared away there.
All right. Perfect. Now, what about this? Parents, when they're reaching out to you and talking to you for the first time, a big question they have is going to be, if we come to Salisbury, what's our playing time going to look like? I know the answer to this, but how do you answer that when families ask you about playing time?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting one too, because I think, and I try to be as transparent as possible with the families and recruits, and I tell a lot of them this as well. I do emphasize a little bit more transparency, or try to make more of a concrete, you know, response for postgrads, right? Because it is a, you know, major year for them. It's a 9-month, like you mentioned, sort of stepping stone, preparing them for the next level. So, you know, if I'm talking to a, you know, sort of freshman, sophomore, junior, it's a little bit more of you gotta earn, you know, nothing is promised. And the same thing is said to our guys this year, who will be returning next year. Just because you played, you know, 30 minutes a game, it doesn't mean you're guaranteed 30 minutes. And that's not because I don't have confidence in you. It's not because I don't like you. It's because I don't want you to be complacent. It's the same thing you'll see at the college level. You're going to have two or three guys, you know, that play the same position at your spot. They're going to be recruiting every single year. And again, you know, iron sharpens iron. So they're consistent with their work, and they got to continue to fight for minutes, which again, in return, makes them a better player, you know, kind of rises the level of play here, makes us a better team. You know, like I said, the post-grad piece, I try to give them a bit more concrete, you know, factual information, because of how important they have 1 year. You know, if they don't earn as many minutes, it's not like they're back the next year and they can have, you know, a major follow-up year. So slightly different communication with the post-grads, but at the end of the day, like it's earned, and it's not earned, you know, the first week of the season. It's earned, you know, the first week of the school year when guys are working out, playing in those open gyms, you know, competing with one another.
I love it. I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier about the live scholastic session that happens in June for NEPSEC schools, right? How important is that for kids to play in that before the upcoming school year?
I think it's really important. You know, the past few years, there have been a lot of college programs that are in attendance. And again, you know, a lot of teams there, a lot of players, which is why I try to proactively, through conversations with the kid, the family, you know, film, really, you know, reach out to colleges, get film out there so they know who we have when we're playing, and they can seek out, you know, certain games or certain individuals, so our guys kind of don't get lost in the mix of, you know, three courts, constant games, you know, 9 to 9. But it's really important, because of all the eyes that are there. And again, you know, a lot of the leagues that guys are coming in, you know, all over the country, all over the world. You know, some are high level leagues, some a little bit weaker. I mean, the prep league, it's a talented league. You know, the physicality, it's, you know, the speed, it aligns with sort of the next level, and it's a proven platform. You know, a lot of colleges recruit out of, you know, NEPSEC basketball. So, I think it's real important to get there, to play there. And kind of, you know, get your name out there, get eyes on you early, which, you know, usually kind of segues into our fall open gyms where, you know, now programs, coaches are familiar with guys, and they make a point to get to campus to seek out, you know, the open runs, follow up, see them play live, and sometimes even circle back. They want to see like a workout or something.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, because I think that June scholastic period is key. But once again, not every kid can make it due to timing, finances, whether they got their visas or not, et cetera. So if a 9th, 10th, or 11th grade family reaches out to you and they ask about reclassifying, what do you tell them they should do? What's your recommendation, especially if they're looking to come to Salisbury School?
I personally think, you know, reclassifying is a huge positive, for many reasons. I mean, it does, again, if you want to play college basketball, right? Like, it gives you another year to get a little bit more athletic, to physically get stronger, you know, IQ increases, the level of maturity, it kind of does all those things. It allows you to take more courses, to kind of improve the academic side of things. It kind of supports all areas of that young man, you know, becoming just a better, well-rounded individual, you know, more mature, more responsible. And obviously, you know, with colleges recruiting out the portal, going older, it makes them a little bit more intriguing, you know, at the next level. So I think it's huge. I was a reclassify, you know, repeat junior when I came to Salisbury. And I'm thrilled that I did it. And I highly encourage everybody to reclass if they're up for it.
All right. And this is a pretty timely discussion based on when we're talking right now. So I don't know when this is going to come out, but we were recording this on April 30th, and there's a proposal that's most likely going to get passed by the NCAA where your clock starts when you graduate high school, where you turn 19, which, to my understanding, that means now a post-grad year. If you graduate high school and then want to do a post-grad year, that post-grad year is going to count against a year of college eligibility. So that's where reclassification is going to come in, so your clock doesn't start yet, right? So knowing what you know now, Bryce, which I know we're still trying to figure all this out, what are your thoughts on that? If you got a kid looking at a post-grad year and it's now going to start counting against their college eligibility, obviously that's different if you're D3 or D1, but like, what are your initial thoughts on this and how you might explain it to your future or current families?
Yeah, you know, I think it's person to person. You know, it varies because you got to weigh out your other options. You know, I'm sure there's guys, right, who maybe are Division III, they really want to become a scholarship player. You got to weigh out like what your Division III options are versus going prep, you know, and trying to, you know, get that scholarship to the Division II, Division I level. I've had families, you know, pondering the idea of like going JUCO, which, you know, is a completely different experience than going prep. Yeah.
Still burning time doing that too. So
exactly. And to that point, like, I usually, you know, want them to do a little bit of research on the JUCO route and what that looks like. And, you know, almost every time they circle back and they're like, you know, the prep route sounds a lot better. Not just because of the, you know, athletic experience, the opportunity, but also, you know, as much as I love basketball, right, like the ball stops bouncing at some point, you know, for all of us. Sometimes it's a 15-year NBA career, and sometimes it's right out of college like me. But, you know, whether it's 1 or 4 years at a prep school, like the prep school network you walk away with, yeah, it changes, yeah, your life. You will know people from all over the country, all over the world, where it's a brotherhood. I mean, we're an all boys school and we use that word a lot. So, it's probably why it came to mind initially, but, it sets you up for success, you know, off the court and for the rest of your life, which JUCO doesn't really do that. So again, that's a usually like a big sort of point that swings families. I still think the basketball, right, like the weightlifting, the, you know, academic piece, you know, is much better at prep school. But, you know, the network, right, that you kind of walk away with from one of these prep schools, from Salisbury School, it will set you up for success, you know, like I said, for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And I like that. And here's a story I give. I had a pretty good player this year, was one of the top players in his state in the Northwest, 6'7", good grades. And he had one offer, which was a military academy that he didn't want to do. Okay, so let's take him now and put him in this current environment. He could take a D2 offer in the Northwest. He could have taken the military offer, which he didn't want. He could have gone JUCO, or he could have done what he actually did, which was go prep school, right? Now, let's assume for this conversation, he goes prep school and he's going to burn a year of college. Out of this post-grad year, he actually got a mid-major scholarship and NIL money that more than paid for his prep school tuition. Now, he's only got 4 years to play there now, in theory, versus 5. But like before COVID and before all these waivers, Bryce, like everyone was doing 4 years anyway, right? Yeah. So this is kind of a new phenomenon. So I don't know if there'll be lawsuits or not, but if that kid would have gone JUCO, would he have gotten the same offer? I don't know. But remember, with prep school, you've got the nice, gentle runway of, you know, getting homesick at a prep school around peers and people that have dealt with it, learning how to get up early in the morning for workouts without mom or dad reminding you, having to turn in assignments without mom or dad reminding you about that too, learning how to do laundry, learning how to deal with the social environment of a new place with kids from all over. So if you go to JUCO, you're not getting any of that ease into it like you do at a prep school. You're hitting, it's just like a college campus. So prep school, you might lose that year, right? And I don't even know if you're losing it because, you know, not everyone took a fifth year, but it's just going to be a much more gentle path to where once you get to that college campus, you're ready to step in and contribute on the basketball court, in the classroom, emotionally, socially. So families will have to make that decision. And with schools like Salisbury, you get the alumni network, even if you're just there for 9 months,
yeah,
right? You're part of that brotherhood you always have. So I don't, you know, 1 year we're talking about, 1 year now on the front end, which is post-grad, is that worth it? Or do you take what you got and do 5 years? I don't know. I don't know. It, just I like prep school now, Bryce, it's all a family decision anyway. So
yeah, absolutely.
You got to adjust with the changes. So, all right, you guys play in the NEPSAC single A, right? Tell me about single A, because some families ask me, like, should we play in triple A, double A, single A, B, the EPL? Give me your pitch on why single A is a good option for players.
I think, you know, single A is a very balanced sort of league. You have, you know, your high-end Division I guys, Division II, Division III. And again, it's proven, you know, guys get scholarships to some of the best schools out of this league. And it kind of checks every box. You can go high academic Division III. You can go low mid-major Division I. And you're playing, you know, day in and day out, like you're playing high level competition. Guys who are chasing the same thing. And you know, our guys, you know, see it every game. Like if you don't show up, it's going to be a long night. I mean, you're playing guys who are chasing the same thing that you're chasing. And most teams are, you know, about eight deep with future college basketball players. So you're going to be challenged every single game. And you're going to be surrounded by a lot of teammates who are going to be pushing you and who want the same thing. So, you know, the competition in this league, you know, it's no joke, but our guys love that. They want to be challenged. They want to play, you know, against the best in New England. And you know, that's kind of, you know, the landscape of Class A basketball.
I agree with you. I agree. My puppy Bananas is not to be trusted, so that's why I keep turning around. So she's made appearances on the podcast before, but hey, anyway, sorry. Sure. This is just part of the game. You were a D1 guard coming out of prep school at the single A level. What does it take today in 2026, Bryce, to be a D1 guard?
You know, one of the biggest things I think it truly takes is consistency. And that's not just like consistency on the court in the games. Like that's a big thing. Like if you want to be a guard, right, you got to be consistent. You got to show up every game. You know, the assist to turnover ratio, as far as taking care of the ball, you know, knocking down shots at a certain percentage. But also like looking back on a lot of my teammates in college, like the consistency off the court. It can't really waver. Like if you want to become a Division I guard, a scholarship level player, you got to be consistent day in and day out with how you eat, sleep, you know, how you approach the film, the on-court skill work. Because again, it's hard to be a scholarship level guard. And again, like even looking at a team like Illinois who made a run, like there's a lot more international players now that you're competing with. So you got to be that much better. That much solid and more consistent. And from a guard standpoint, you got to be vocal, which is something, you know, it can be foreign to some guards when they step foot here on campus. But as a guard, like you got to be somebody who can direct guys, you know, get guys in the sets, get guys into different plays, talk through, you know, different actions on defense. And if you're a point guard, you're kind of like the quarterback on the floor, right? So, you know, playing with like the utmost effort, right? You know, not worrying about, you know, trying to look cool, but being one of the guys who plays the absolute hardest at all times on the floor while communicating and being one of the most consistent guys on the floor, that puts you in a really good position, you know, to be a scholarship level player. You know, without some of those things, it's really hard. And, you know, a lot of college coaches may have some concerns or doubts, especially if they can go, you know, into the portal and maybe get somebody who they believe kind of understands some of those pieces because they've already played at that level, right? They see the level of communication. They see how hard you actually have to play day in and day out. And just the consistency, like what the schedule looks like, how you got to approach the on and off court piece. Say those are kind of the main areas.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for sharing that. And last question. What do you see as the future of prep school basketball?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the future of prep school basketball it's getting better and better. I see, you know, more and more prep schools bringing in international guys, right? The pool's getting a lot larger. And it's getting that much harder to be a scholarship level player. So therefore I think, you know, more and more talent is kind of funneling into prep school hoops. Which is awesome. I mean, I talked to a lot of the coaches that we played against, a lot of coaches, you know, at our annual coaches meeting down in Worcester, and they all say the same thing, like the league's good and yeah. It's getting better. And again, if you don't show up one night, like you're going to get punched in the mouth and it's going to be a long night. You got to bring it, which is great for coaches, right? Because, you know, we got to constantly, you know, get better, improve, learn, you know, and prepare for those games. And our players got to, you know, push themselves, continue to get better, because, you know, on any given night, anybody can come out and beat you. And everybody in the league is chasing the same dream, the same goal that you're kind of going after. So you got to prove to yourself that you're that much better than all your opponents. And I mean, if you follow the scores and everything, like this year, anybody in Class A could really beat anybody. And that's exciting. But it just really shows like how talented, you know, the programs are and how I think, you know, Knapsack Hoops is truly on the rise.
I love it. Thanks for sharing that. And we're going to finish up with some quick hitters. All right. Best player you've ever played against.
Best player I ever played against. Thon Maker. It's a bit of a random one. Thon Maker. I don't know. He
high school player.
Yeah. He I mean, standing about 7 feet with guard skills. Luckily I didn't have to guard him. But running any pick and rolls, he was on the other side of that screen, so tried to attack away from him.
Is he still in the NBA? I don't hear that name much.
I don't think so. Little bit of a blast from the past. Why I probably go with that name is like, if I'm thinking of like a guy who just really controlled the game when we played, like he was just, you know, we didn't really have an answer for him.
Okay. Who's the best player you've coached against?
I'd say last year the individual who impressed me the most, if I'm not mixing up my years, Ryder Frost out of Phillips Exeter. You know, absolutely torched us and did so on very few dribbles, which is, you know, something that I think a lot of people may overlook, like, you know, one or two dribbles, get into a spot, catch and shoot, moving without the ball, like high IQ on top of a great frame, very athletic and, you know, in the gym range, he was, you know, a tough matchup.
All right. What's your favorite movie?
Favorite movie? You know, we're going to go with a classic, Coach Carter.
Oh, nice. Okay. And then what are your hobbies when you're not devoting your brain space and time to basketball, which it seems like you spend a lot of time doing?
I do. You know, I love, you know, working out myself. I love, you know, getting into the gym, because it allows me to continue to get on the floor with these guys and actually like train them, work them out. I love getting outdoors, you know, going on hikes, you know, spending time at the beach, kayaking, things like that. And, you know, I also have kind of gotten into running lately, which, was more of like a punishment when I was a player. I got away from it for a few years. You know, I was like, I don't need to run that much anymore. I'm not, you know, playing basketball. But now I think it, you know, I've gotten into, a little bit of a running hobby where, you know, push myself, challenge myself, you know, listen to different podcasts, you know, music, and, you know, really gets me away from the basketball, you know, the classroom in a healthy way.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a recommendation to you. So just like you, all I did running in my youth was, you know, sprints or, you know, the preseason conditioning.
Yeah.
And obviously a little bit of military stuff at the academy. But when I turned 41, I saw my brother-in-law run the Ironman. And then right after that, I heard a David Goggins podcast. And the next day I signed up for the DC Marine Corps Marathon. And me being a guy that probably never ran more than 4 miles, knew I had 4 months to train for a marathon. And it was so interesting because I'd never run more than 4 miles. And a lot of it's up here. And I thought that was interesting, was the mental aspect of it. So my challenge to you is, if you have any desire, sign up for a marathon and just see what it's like. And I think if every high school kid in America ran a marathon at some point between 16 and 19, it would, one, get them in shape. Two, teach them discipline. Three, give them a sense of accomplishment that I think they would carry with them throughout their lives. And I think it would change the entire landscape of America. So obviously you can't do that from my position, but what are your thoughts on maybe trying a marathon?
I'm pretty interested. I like the mental component. Like I'm a big, you know, fan of like mental toughness, which I think really aligns with, you know, running a marathon. And I'm huge on like setting goals. So like training for a marathon would really check that box and like preparing. So I'm up for it. I think I'm going to have to look into that.
We can talk offline. I can give you my 2 cents. All right. But Josh Merkel, friend of the program and head coach of D3 national champion Randolph Macon, he runs ultras, like 50 miles. He's run here in Colorado. He's run in Arizona. He's been trying me to get to do an ultra. I'm not there yet. 49, almost 50. I don't know if I've got the bones of the time or the desire to do that. But I know it makes him a better coach. I know it makes him a better parent, better husband. He has less time. He's more tired. But like, knowing you've got that, I mean, how many other head coaches are doing that stuff, Bryce, right? And I'm not suggesting you do it. It's just interesting that like players seeing you do that, I think that's a big inspiration to them too. So anyway, my 2 cents off the topic. We've talked a lot today about a lot of different topics. Is there anything we didn't touch on that you want to mention?
I think that's pretty much talked about everything, you know, I can think of.
All right. Like if anyone's interested, go ahead.
Really grateful, you know, because obviously coaching, working at Salisbury, you know, I think it's a phenomenal place and a phenomenal opportunity, but, a big reason why, you know, I ended up here, is because it changed my life. You know, I came in as the young basketball player who, you know, wanted to get a scholarship. And I didn't at the time grasp like how beneficial prep school could be, how life changing the experience can be, off the court, academically, socially, emotionally, you know, turning me into a you know, mature, well-rounded young man, like forever grateful. And you know, could never, you know, repay the coaches, the parents, you know, the people in my circle who guided me this way. But you know, I can get back involved here and hopefully provide the same opportunity for, you know, young men, like my younger self, and, hopefully, you know, help change their lives. Just like, you know, many, many coaches and teachers at Salisbury changed mine.
I love that. And if anyone's interested in reaching out to Bryce, all his information is going to be in the show notes. So be sure to follow him on the socials. And if you want to reach out to him, his email will be below. So Bryce, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate you sharing your story and a little bit more about Salisbury.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And if you guys like this, be sure to share this with a friend. Subscribe to YouTube where you've got bonus content, and go to the prepathletics.com website and sign up for our monthly newsletter where we keep you up to date on all the latest, especially with this new NCAA stuff coming out. We'll be updating you on that. We talk about our new signings, anything we've learned in the prep school world. So stay up to date, share it with a friend. We really try to help you guys raise your game and knowledge to make the best decision possible for your future. So thanks for joining us today. We'll see you next time on the Prep Athletics Podcast. Take care.